Please note that the opinions and perspectives shared on the Real Pharma podcast by Nari O and Ian Wendt are their own. These views do not represent the positions, strategies, or opinions of their employers or any other organizations with which they may be affiliated. Now on with the show.
A trend will be getting ready for a massive 2025, and you may not see a huge amount of roles execute in the next 3 months, but there will be a lot of great positions being posted. You need to be in the mix for them. You need to be interviewing, you need to be networking, you need to be active. And I think that not so much Q4, but really 2025, we're going to see a real boom in hiring across a lot of different spaces. And if oncology comes back as well, this could be one of the most exciting markets that we've ever worked in.
This is Real Pharma, your podcast for real conversations with pharma pathfinders. In every episode, you will hear from an industry insider who has a story to share that goes beyond the headlines. No spin, no sacred cows, no hidden agendas, just stories and the people behind them. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Nari O and Ian Wendt.
Welcome back to another episode of the Real Pharma Podcast. I'm Nari O.
And I'm Ian Wendt. Today, we have a returning guest who always brings the latest and most valuable insights into what's happening in the world of pharma and biotech hiring.
That's right. We're excited to welcome back Christian Rawlings, who is fresh off conversations with over 20 industry leaders. So, you know, he's coming in with the most up-to-date trends, forecasts, and insider knowledge.
So Christian has been at the forefront of understanding how digital, advanced analytics, and leadership are reshaping the industry, from the rise of smaller biotechs commercializing their assets to the explosive demand for talent across the sector. There's so much to dig into today.
And with Q4 on the horizon, we're diving into what companies and candidates need to know to navigate the end of the year and even look ahead to 2025. Christian, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome back.
And it is a pleasure to be back. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, third time here. We're really excited to get back into this conversation and update the audience on some of the research findings, insights that you're bringing to the discussion. And to start it off, reflecting on the past year, let's just explore kind of what therapy areas have been the major drivers of commercial hiring in the biotech and pharma industries.
This year, and we've covered it in previous episodes in greater depth, but as a brief recap, we've seen a huge demand or increase in demand for hiring in companies that are specialized or have added therapy areas in non-oncology segments, in chronic disease areas which have a high level of competitive product launches coming around in 2024 and 2025. So within that, I've seen a immediate demand at the start of the year, but really consistent pull through in the respiratory space where companies are launching and companies need to find the best launch talent. In the dermatology space, there has been a continued drive and demand for best-in-class talent. We've also seen a huge amount of demand in more smaller biotechs, but really for autoimmune diseases and rare diseases focused launch talent. And that is not just commercial, but also in medical affairs and health economics. And what I've seen really as more of a headline in the last few months is I'm getting a lot of calls and having a lot of conversations about companies focused in complementary therapeutics and bispecifics as well. So whereas in the first half of the year, you were very focused in dermatology, respiratory, also ophthalmology. Now I'm seeing a broadening of the therapy areas, but a real focus on those complementary therapeutic areas as well as bispecifics coming through.
Within those therapeutic areas that you mentioned, I think you had called out digital and analytics in particular are the skill sets that maybe are in the highest demand. Is that different than just looking back a year ago? Because I feel like those have always been pretty important. Is that accelerating? What's behind that? Can we call that kind of the hot area of growth right now?
When I referenced the desire and the need to have hyper-competitive launches, companies are using every tool possible to make sure that that is achieved. And whilst I have not spent a huge amount of time recruiting data scientists as a core function, I'm getting more and more calls for individuals, hiring needs that is, to find individuals who have a mixture of commercial expertise, but then also understand omnichannel strategy, omnichannel analytics, can utilize data to better inform business decisions. And if there's something which is really driving that at the moment, I would say it's the adoption of AI within pharmaceutical companies. Whilst I think that pharmaceuticals has not had as much impact on the commercial side with AI right now. We're definitely seeing spikes, and I have a lot of different companies looking especially for advanced analytics and omnichannel analytics at this moment in time.
So when you think about AI, and you know, we had Andre Bates on here a little while ago talking about AI, how it's infusing all areas of pharma, let's say from drug development all the way up through commercialization. But where does that skill set come from? It's so new. It's not like there's a whole group of pharma professionals that have AI experience as a part of their typical role that they've had in the industry over the last 20 years. Are these people coming from outside of pharma? Are they coming from the tech space? Where do you find that talent?
You'd be surprised how many AI and data scientists there actually are within the pharmaceutical industry. They are generally quite hidden. And I think a big reason why, as a search consultant, I'm receiving calls is to actively go out and search for those people. So I think in the short run, companies are looking to make strategic hires with talent who were maybe in companies that were more forward-thinking a couple of years ago and started to invest earlier, and so plucking from them. But I think as far as an industry trend is concerned, we're going to start to see salaries rising in this AI and analytics area. And as such, it's going to be more interesting for talent to review companies outside of core data areas or tech companies, because the pharmaceutical companies will be able to match the salaries that are coming through. So I see this as a really exciting growth area in the long term, where we're going to see a lot of growth from the comp side. But in the short run, we're going to be finding folks from pharma. In the long run, there will be a bleed from tech into pharmaceuticals. And I'm really excited to see that talent enter this market.
Yeah, makes sense.
So when we talked to Andrew Bates, we talked about the entire life cycle and all the different ways we can apply AI and advanced analytics to drive drug development and delivery. For what you're seeing, how do people apply these things, especially for commercialization and launches?
Sure. So I think that there's always a line that we must draw when it comes to what a recruitment consultant can provide to you as application. I'm referencing the demand trends and being able to talk to candidates about the companies who are going to spend the most time, money, effort in really becoming a market leader. When it comes down to the really core, what they're doing on a day-to-day basis, that's better to speak with industry experts who are inside the space. I'm more reflecting the talent demand at this point in time.
That's a fair point, but at least there is a lot of demand, so that I think you're onto something there. All right, so then a follow-up question, Christian. For these really hot areas of advanced analytics, omnichannel, and so on, what kind of experts are companies hiring for? You know, what levels of expertise?
The most important or highest demand that I've seen at this point in time is not vice presidents and senior vice presidents, interestingly enough. I've been seeing a huge amount of demand really around that director level, where the key things that people need to have to be successful when it comes to being recruited into this area is a strong understanding of the technical components. If they have production level code experience, then phenomenal. That's really going to be an outstanding trait to talk about in interviews. But something that I think is going to differentiate a candidate is being able to talk about how hands-on they are as a professional, right? As opposed to setting out strategy, really being able to pull it through. And then I think that the ability to communicate effectively with internal stakeholders and educate individuals who have never utilized maybe omnichannel analytics or advanced analytics in the past, and saying, this is how much easier this can make your life, and subsequently how much more effectively you can launch. You've got to have the ability to be technical, the desire to be hands-on and to build something, and then the ability to really convince and sell internally and make sure that this isn't a lot of money that's going down the drain and that you can evolve your company. But if you can do that, then you change the way that the pharmaceutical industry operates. You change the way that your company launches a drug, and subsequently your star is going to rise very quickly. So those are going to be the key areas, but that's not at the VP and SVP level. That's a lot more at the director level. But I am breaking records with the kind of offers that I'm getting for candidates in that space when I compare it even with areas like forecasting or commercial analytics or insights and analytics, which have been super duper hot this year. The advanced side of things is breaking those records.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because it's great to hear there's this increased demand for maybe scarce skill sets. Companies are willing to pay for the right skill, the right experience. And ultimately, that sounds like it translates into companies potentially paying top dollar for talent. Good for all of us, I suppose. But how have salary expectations and the negotiation dynamics changed for candidates in the market? Are we still in more of a buyer's market, meaning the companies, there's a lot of excess talent out there and companies maybe are more in the driver's seat, or is it more of a seller's market where the candidates are a little more in the driver's seat?
This year, there has been a massive demand for change agents and strategic leaders coming into the industry. So again, whilst core analytics and looking at data science as part of pharmaceuticals is an emerging trend, the bread and butter of what I've seen this year is senior leaders making impact in companies. And as such, there was a lot of talent on the market at the beginning of the year. I'm really excited to see that a huge number of senior professionals have been placed into roles, right? By myself, by my colleagues, by my competitors, through the organic flow of the market. And when I speak with those individuals or when I'm organizing those offers, they're generally at the top of the range. And candidates are getting better offers now than even they were 4 months ago. So it's a continuing trend. The reason for that is not necessarily because it's a buyer or a seller's market, but quality is being put as the absolute forefront of why organizations are making hires. They're not just looking to fill seats at the moment. They're looking for truly somebody who's going to be a change agent. Also, we've seen perhaps a contraction in the number of headcount for any one subject area. So whereas maybe a few years ago, you would have had two or three people leading your commercial launch with different facets, now companies are looking for that Swiss Army knife who can understand everything from the insights and analytics side of things to how to run a sales team to how to lead a marketing launch. And so if you've got that diversity of experience, then you're going to be able to set a much higher price. And especially if you've got some really amazing stories to tell behind that.
You mentioned this term change agent, right? I think we've all heard it. We all probably think that's a good thing somehow. How do you define that? Or maybe a better way to ask the question is, what does that look like on a resume? As you're looking at somebody's resume or having a phone conversation with them, how do you identify who that is? And maybe as your clients are asking for somebody that meets that profile, how do they screen for that through the interview process?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to storytelling. So if I'm looking at somebody's resume and say they've launched drug X in the diabetes space and they have a team of 20 on their resume, I'm going to say to them, okay, so you worked as a VP in this area for 3 years. Can you talk to me about where the product and the team were when you started and where they were when you were promoted out of this position? I'm really going to want to hear the story. I'm going to want to understand tangible pieces around how do you set the foundations and the framework? How do you come in and assess quickly how you're going to be able to make a difference? And then if you need to make hires, then fantastic. What are you going to do to make sure that they are solving the problems that you have and that it's not just going to be, oh, we changed something, so it's going to be good, but actually there's no merit to it. More importantly, what can you do to be a cost saver, right? And how can you reinvigorate the talent within your team? I don't think the immediate thing that people need to do is scrap their existing organizational functions and start again if you can make somebody excited. So when I'm looking at a change agent, I want somebody who can come and assess quickly and make the most efficient decisions to be able to drive a team back to success. That's going to be one way of doing it. The second is looking at what they were up against internally or externally. Perhaps somebody on their resume was working for an organization and they only grew on paper, they only grew the percentage of sales by 10%. But when you bring that back and you say, okay, there were 15 other drugs in the market and the best that some other company had was minus 2%, suddenly you're a change agent, you're doing something super special. So I think it's really getting under the hood and again, having that conversation, because the resume is super important. I speak to folks all the time, should I have a one-page resume, two-page resume, et cetera? It's like, you should be able to tell stories from your resume and use it as a foundation to build upon.
I think that's such an important point because, you know, I think too often candidates that I see sometimes fall into the pattern or maybe the trap of just articulating where they've been, how long they've been there, the role they had, the title they had. And as you said, telling a story around it makes it so much more compelling or impactful in terms of the impact they had, right? And whether or not they're a change agent. So I think that's a good takeaway for any of us to think about. It's not just about how many years you're a company A and B and C, really what was the value or impact that you had there.
If I can also make a suggestion, when it comes to those questions, whether you're speaking with a recruitment consultant or you're speaking with the hiring manager directly, specifics are important. The amount of times I've had a conversation with somebody and we're running through prep or we're having our first initial discussion, and they're saying, well, I wear many hats and I do many things and I was responsible for a lot. I need something tangible, right? And I'm sure you see this, Ian and Ari, when you're interviewing people, you have to see something tangible and it has to be discussed.
And we call those glittering generalities, right? You know, yeah.
So Christian, it sounds a little bit like from what you're describing with the focus on hands-on leaders who are change agents who can really tell a story around what exactly they did to achieve exactly what results. It's a very entrepreneurial kind of approach. So every person has to be able to do more than what you would maybe expect from the traditional role description, because there is this contraction of roles and positions. And even though your update was very optimistic, I think, or very encouraging in terms of people getting hired and salaries getting higher as well, it seems like demands are also shifting towards you need to be both a specialist and a generalist almost. Like what we see with colleges, right? They want this T-shape. So you're a generalist and you have one area where you maybe have more depth, but you can't just do one small area, one small vertical within your function. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when candidates are considering between different opportunities, and I am seeing it a lot where multiple recent appointments that I've made, the candidate had two or three different offers simultaneously. When they're making that decision, it shouldn't be about, I know it's going to sound crazy, it shouldn't be about what's immediately in front of you on the job description. And it shouldn't be about the salary. It should be, if we're looking for change agents and people who are going to build something, how much buy-in is there into this position actually having a mandate for change? And where does this company want to be in a few years' time? Something that we always say in my company is get the right people on the bus. And if you are on the right bus, then it's going to take you places and be excited about the future. But if you're looking at an organization and saying, oh, I look at the stock and it's down 25%, et cetera, well, yeah, that's probably a part of why they're looking to make a confidential executive appointment to make some major change. You've got to be willing to buy into that. And risk comes with that, but also opportunity. So I just really think that people should focus on the mission and companies should focus on the change agent components to have real success in the next couple of years.
We've talked about what do companies want from the candidates, but you're shifting it now a little bit towards what should candidates look for in a company. It sounds like you are advising them to look at the company's mission and have a more long-term horizon. So not just look at the next role, but what's the long-term career progression? Is that what you're seeing, that people are staying with companies for 3-4 roles, or is there still more of this jumping around?
I have seen over the last few years that there have been a lot of people who have maybe made a change from an organization where they were for 10 or 15 years and since then have had multiple new roles because they've been affected by restructures, etc. There was so much hiring going on in 2021 and 2022 that the amount of money you could make just to make a switch eventually got to a point where, well, everyone else is doing it, I should probably do it as well. Like that kind of fear of missing out will creep in even at the highest levels of recruitment. And since then, a lot of companies were not able to pull through with their vision and their mission. And so I do feel as though there are companies who have kept and retained their talent and people have been consistently promoted. But more often than not, folks who have made a move have then made potentially a second move and are now sat there thinking, is my resume ruined because I've been at two different companies in the space of 3 years? It's definitely not. Again, it's explain the situation, understand what you were trying to do and what you were trying to build there. And you can still have a very, very smooth recruitment process. But yeah, I think the days of being with one company for 25 years ended a few years ago.
And you mentioned 2021, and we've talked about it in previous episodes as well. Of course, a lot happened. There was a lot of money also pouring into biopharma, and we had a lot of IPOs. That has now balance out a lot over the last few years. And I think you have a view also on what does it mean for smaller companies in terms of there are fewer IPOs, there's fewer money, but that may not all be negative. Can you talk about that?
If we can look with a slightly more like year, 2 year, 3 year lens at the market, I think that there's a lot more optimism and excitement. I know people want impact now. They want to make a change now. But again, if we think about the next few years, a couple of years ago, I feel as though a lot of organizations were being acquired very, very quickly. Just on the first positive data readout, there was an interest in snapping them up. And we even saw that a bit at the beginning of this year. but there was an undercurrent of organizations who were keeping their powder dry. They weren't coming to ASCO or similar conferences and saying, we have the best data ever, and getting snapped up. And I'm seeing a lot of those organizations really pulling through now and looking to hire more of their commercialization experts. Again, I'm not an R&D recruiter. I don't work with preclinical roles. So I'm really looking at the medical affairs, HR, and commercial standpoint. I'm seeing more small organizations. They've kind of run the gauntlet. They've now got a later phase asset, and now they're really looking to build out. So we're almost seeing this more layered market where you still have your major pharmaceutical companies, the kind of top five, top 10, who will go on major hiring sprees, but then also major layoffs. You have your mid-sized companies, my, I would say, core area over the last 10 years, who will be getting ready to launch a drug. But now we're really seeing the small biotechs that I know a lot of my talent pool and folks who I work with are looking for. They're actually going to be hiring because they've not been bought. And so we should really be, again, looking at the therapy areas that are hot and which companies are now coming through, haven't been acquired, and will subsequently be commercializing assets internally and be needing to hire really great people to do that.
So let's talk about oncology a little bit. Selfishly, this is an area that's of particular interest to me. And you identified it as one of the hot therapeutic areas. I think you've made maybe some predictions or identified some trends that you think will be more evident in 2025. But what are your thoughts, maybe more specifically, on bispecifics and the trend of small biotechs now moving towards commercialization and hiring in the oncology space specifically?
So I didn't know what a bispecific was a year ago. It wasn't something which was being discussed.
Do you want to define that for the audience, or do you want me to try?
I'm going to lean on the CCO and the doctor in this conversation to define that. So if you could start, that'd be great.
As I understand it, and we'll see the comments I get from the audience if I don't get this right, it's an antibody that actually binds to two different antigens, right? So that's the bispecific. It's not specific to one antigen, it's specific to two. Hopefully that helps frame that up a little bit for the audience.
And what I've seen with that is there's some incredible data being announced at the moment as competitor products to the major assets, which had so many indications that I felt as though they depressed the market a little bit. And those coming through, there's green shoots, right? Also, a lot of these smaller oncology biotechs who were very, very quiet in the first half of the year. And again, coming back to ASCO was so quiet in comparison to other years that I've been there that I was very, very surprised. But seeing those companies now making announcements, later phase products coming through, I feel as though there are green shoots within the oncology market. And it probably won't be this year, but certainly in Q1 or Q2 of 2025, I expect oncology to really pop. And I think that if we can see positive signs around that bispecific data, that could very well convert into a hiring trend. And obviously, more importantly, more options for patients and the chance to do something really incredible and perhaps have the next rush that we saw with CAR T and immunotherapies, which is super exciting.
And it's also interesting because you talked about a few areas in the last two episodes. And for instance, one area that you pointed out as a hot one was radiopharmacology. And since that episode, that's all I see in the headlines. It really is one acquisition after another. So let's see what happens around bispecifics, since you just brought it up here.
We've kind of been talking about some of these hot areas, trends, which I think are great, you know, try to understand them, try to stay ahead of them. But, you know, what is actionable, let's say, from a candidate's perspective? They might say, well, you know, I don't have experience in that area, or all the things that Christian just mentioned that are the hot areas or trends that are coming up don't really seem to apply to the work that I've been doing. So what can candidates do, or how maybe do they tell their story better to at least ride that wave to some extent and not miss out on some of these opportunities? I think I hear that sometimes. People think, well, you know, it's all the focus, all the money, all the growth is over here, and I've been in this other area, and gee, now what do I do? Do you hear that? And if you do, what advice do you offer candidates?
I had a conversation with somebody who had been laid off from a major pharmaceutical company, and they had worked for that company for 20 years, and they'd just been laid off, right? And it was tough to hear. But that person was coming in very aware that they've not looked for a job in nearly two decades. And so just saying, hey, here I am, what do I need to know? And candidly, you are going to have to gear up to be a salesperson, irrespective of what your job title was. And what you're selling is your expertise and your experience. As a salesperson, you need to be very, very comfortable with rejection. You need to be comfortable with being beaten at the last post, even though you did everything right on paper. You need to be everywhere. And you need to constantly be learning and trying to educate the people around you as to the value that you can provide. And from there, you're going to start seeing more traction and opportunities. But if you're so selective and you try and have this sniper approach, or even worse, you start sitting there and saying, well, I spoke to 5 recruiters the other day and nobody called me back, or I applied to 20 jobs and nobody gave me a yes. Ask yourself more, did I sell myself in those 5 conversations? And how did I go out of my way to create connections? Since we last spoke, I have completely reorganized the way that EPM Scientific, my company, does reference checks, right? That we do them way earlier in the process, as opposed to them becoming something which is seen as classically at the end. We're doing it way sooner and we're able to provide those references, or saying, hey, listen, you're connected to so-and-so, so-and-so, give them a call and do the reference directly after the second round interview. I would say exactly the same thing to candidates. If you're applying to a role and you know who the hiring manager is, who are the mutual connections there? Who can advocate for you, right? And if you're able to get an internal recommendation, then maybe you don't have that core therapy area, but you've got amazing hustle, you are a change agent, you do things that nobody else does, and you can get that role. So you're referencing and leveraging your network there. And I think the final piece is be patient and understand it does take time. So you need to set up a process where are you getting slightly better every single day? Are your interview questions getting sharper? Is your pitch getting better? If you can do that, then this is a relatively quiet time of year in comparison to what I see in Q1 or even during the summer. So this is the time to really hone those skills, have those networking conversations. And I think that people are going to be able to make a difference.
That's great advice.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's certainly accurate and helpful, but it's hard to implement, I think, for a lot of people, especially if that's not your style or if you haven't done that before. Maybe you don't come out of the commercial world. Like, I think for marketers and salespeople, maybe that's easier. But the idea of selling yourself is so important. And I think for a lot of us, it's hard, right? You know, nobody wants to be immodest or feel like they're bragging about themselves, or, you know, they think maybe their work and their resume speaks for itself, but that's not enough, right? You have to be able to tell that story, as we were talking about earlier. So yeah, I love that advice. I wish more candidates embraced that. I think it'd make the client, the company, make better decisions and have greater insight into what that candidate offers. And then certainly, you know, allow that candidate to be more competitive. So yeah, thank you.
And Christian, you also specifically spoke about executive presence during the last episode that we recorded with you. And since then, we launched one episode with Dr. Laura Sokola on executive presentation skills, on executive presence. What does it take to sell yourself? So if anybody is interested in that topic, please also check out that episode. But I think to your point, it's probably something that is not natural or comfortable for most of us. But given the still ongoing market dynamics and the realities of what you're seeing every day, there's really no way around it, right?
Get comfortable being uncomfortable, right? The minute that people stop seeing a networking event as something where it's like, that's a stranger over there, I don't want to speak to them, and see it as an opportunity to connect with somebody, learn something new, then you run towards it like people who get into reading run towards a new book, right? As somebody who has recently started reading more and more, I feel this. And I used to look at a book and be like, ah, that's terrifying. I'm absolutely terrified. And I'm like, right, let's do it. Let's read another classic and see what happens. And it's that change your mindset about what's going on. If it's going to networking events, if it's being comfortable reaching out to somebody and cold calling a hiring manager, cold calling. I got a call the other day from a candidate who said, hey, I got your name off of somebody. I want to talk to you about my background. And they were like an SVP from a major pharmaceutical company. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This person just cold called me. This is great. Don't be afraid to reach out to people cold. Don't just do it through LinkedIn and what have you. There's so many more things. And if we can get comfortable doing that, then this gets a lot easier. And so I think, yeah, just get comfortable being uncomfortable. Understand that you may feel as though your work speaks for itself, but you need to speak for your work.
So get comfortable with rejection.
Absolutely.
No shame in that. On the flip side, what can companies do to be as attractive as possible to candidates, especially if, as you mentioned earlier, there's a hot area where it's really hard to get a great candidate? And you said a few things about rolling out the red carpet and being personable and just having that human element, but anything else that you want to mention in this regard?
Yeah, so this is big. Where companies can make a massive difference is having a clear timeline and process and what to expect. There are a lot of great candidates available or passively open, and they will have choices irrespective of the market dynamics. Great candidates will always have choices. So if you can really provide, if you're a hiring manager to your internal talent acquisition partner, to your external recruiter, whoever it is that you're utilizing for your search, the qualification of the role and what is the problem we're trying to solve. If you have somebody searching, trying to solve a problem, as opposed to trying to hit keywords, then you're going to get a way better shortlist coming through in a much shorter period of time, because you can ask pointed questions. And simultaneously, rather than a prospective candidate saying, okay, check, I've got an MBA, check, I've got 10 years of pharmaceutical experience, they're saying, oh, well, I've solved that problem in the past and I loved doing it. So I'm way more excited about this role than others. So what is the problem we're trying to solve? Second thing is really the timeline and stakeholders. I had a really exciting process that I recently worked on where the timeline was laid out from the get-go and we worked to it and we hit it. And I think that so often companies will come in and say, in fact, the most regular answer when I say, when do you want this filled? Yesterday. It's always the case. And I'm like, no, we need to actually drill down and work on a timeline. If you as a talent acquisition professional or as a recruiter or as a hiring manager can walk a candidate through the timeline that it's going to be, then they can get their mind right about what they need to do. And they're going to be thinking with the end in mind, as opposed to this walking in the dark with their hands out, seeing if there's a wall or a ditch that they're going to fall into. The next thing is, what are the like to have and what are the must have components in a profile? How often do we see a resume and it's got 60% of the things on the job description, but the candidate gets the job because they're doing all these things you didn't even expect. That's the best person. But would that person have ever applied directly if on your job description you have to have every single component of this before you even apply? So what do we like to have and what are the must-haves? And oftentimes personality, leadership, change agent, those kind of things aren't going to be on the JD. So include them or make sure that you're screening for them in your interviews. Just to pause there for a second, the speed at which decisions are made between rounds is going to be absolutely massive, because recruitment is momentum. And whilst it could be the case that you are going every 2 weeks into an interview and you're not hearing anything until then and you end up getting the job, much more likely if you have consistent feedback timelines and you understand what the next step looks like, you're going to be more engaged and the hiring manager is going to keep this as more of a priority. The other piece is ultimately single versus multiple candidates in an interview. If we think back 20 years ago, recruitment was sitting outside of a room where the interviewer was inside and everybody lined up on a chair and you have eight of you there. And then, you know, okay, I'm up against these eight, right? And you're sizing them up and, you know, who's got an edge? Who do I think is going to potentially be better than me? Somewhere along the way, that's gone. And a lot of candidates will like to think that they're the only person interviewing, but it's just not the case, right? So if you're able to say to a candidate, listen, you're the first person that we've spoken to about this role, and we don't move forward unless we have four candidates from a first round, but we make a decision 99% of the time in the timelines that we set, I would much rather those odds and make it more competitive than being like, we're going to hire somebody at some point in time and you're an interesting candidate, but we don't really know who else we've got. So there are quite a few things to think about for hiring managers, but if we can work with deliberate action, speed, and intensity, and then make sure that we're honest with people throughout the process, then you can actually get candidates who are absolutely phenomenal, not necessarily for the most money, right? But they're actually bought into the idea of what the company's trying to do, the mission that we spoke about earlier. Those are some of the key things that I would look at and recommend to folks who are hiring.
Great. Talking to you is always great and interesting, especially since you give a lot of really tangible, practical advice for both companies and candidates. But I think my favorite part is always, what are the trends that you see coming up? So with your crystal ball, can we talk a little bit about what are the major trends that you foresee for the last quarter of this year and then into maybe the first half of next year? What's on your mind? What are you excited about? What's going to happen?
One of the first things to take a look at is, in the next 3 months, we are going to see a lot of companies saying, we're going to start prepping for next year, but we're not going to be pulling the trigger. A trend will be getting ready for a massive 2025. You may not see a huge amount of roles execute in the next 3 months, but there will be a lot of great positions being posted and you need to be in the mix for them. You need to be interviewing, you need to be networking, you need to be active. And I think that not so much Q4, but really 2025, we're going to see a real boom in hiring across a lot of different spaces. And if oncology comes back as well, this could be one of the most exciting markets that we've ever worked in. So yeah, it's kind of this deep breath before the plunge at this point in time. And you need to be networking aggressively. You obviously had expert episodes on HEOR and on medical affairs over the past few weeks and months. And I'm going to continue to see a huge demand, especially in the HEOR space. I feel as though there are components of data and analytics which are really driving forward the case for HEOR within businesses. And then practically how HEOR and market access can work together is going to be important. So I'm going to see a lot of companies who are driving to hire senior leaders in that space. I think one of the most exciting pieces, and not that we repeat, but it's small biotechs going to be hiring again, right? And it's not just going to be one or two people and then a sale. It's actually, we're going to see the next tranche of small biotechs that could become medium-sized biotechs and in really exciting therapy areas as well. So there's a lot of demand going on. And then finally, I think pharmaceutical sales is not something that we've spoken about in a huge amount of depth. But as far as the markets that we cover, it was actually the first ever placement that I made was a rare diseases sales representative in the south of France. And I still remember his name. Shout out to Frank. We'll always remember you. The important thing to look at there is we've covered this space for a decade. I have never seen so much demand for pharmaceutical sales reps with excellent track records, presidents, clubs, and really tangible launch experience in great networks who are digitally enabled, who understand how to sell in 2024. And have consistently held their own in this market. There's so much coming through. So I know there's been a lot of conversation over the last few years, and maybe we should have a broader conversation about this, about the role of pharmaceutical sales reps versus thought leader liaisons versus other commercial components, and of course MSLs as well. But yeah, that market is huge right now.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that as well. And just to reflect back on some of your advice of what should companies do to be competitive, to land the candidate that they really are looking for, I think we've maybe learned a little bit the hard way as well, is speed to action is just so critical, and communication, right? If they don't know what your intentions are in the timelines, or you're slower than the competitor and your competitor out there is communicating better with that candidate, you'll lose the candidate. It's a competitive market. Definitely have seen that develop. And it's always been a component, I suppose, of recruiting, but it seems to be more competitive recently, at least in my experience. So great news for candidates out there, right? I think the message for the hiring managers is, boy, you need to signal appropriately what your intentions are and the timelines and live up to those timelines and move quickly. If not, somebody else will.
And I also think, don't be afraid to challenge people in interviews as well. There's been several hiring managers who have been very kind of softball questions in their interviews, and then the hire's been made, and then after 3 months, the person isn't producing. And then I've got a call to say, okay, we hired this person, we want to replace them, can you help? And once we've done the analysis, it's come down to a lot of the interview questions. So if there are difficult things, right, then make sure that you're asking them and being direct, because again, people will rise to that challenge and they'll either be excited to solve the challenge or they'll self-select out. But either way, you win because you asked up front before it was actually a business issue.
And how competitive is the landscape? And we've talked about the hiring manager and the companies, we've talked about the candidates. I'd love to peek behind the curtain a little bit in terms of the recruitment industry. What is the outlook for EPM and the broader recruitment industry? Sounds like maybe there's some positive indicators there. You sound excited about 2025, so I get excited about that as well. But how competitive is it? And what do you guys think about? You know, we're always curious about your industry a little bit as well.
Yeah, because it's a fascinating industry. You have literally thousands of potential brokers, and they're all very proactive in reaching out to you saying that they're the best, and some deliver with consistency.
They're not always right. No, that's not true.
Yeah, some are not always right, right? I'm not saying that I'm perfect by any stretch of the imagination. It's super competitive as far as the amount of vendors that are out there. But I personally, having seen it for 10 years, I do not think that people are going to the fullest extent of what it means to be a recruitment consultant. So they're not embedding themselves in the market and actively meeting as many people as they can. They're not getting on a plane or getting on a train or getting in a car to go and make it real for people. And that's, I think, a difference maker, how embedded you are in your space, because everybody has the same tools to send a LinkedIn message, right? Credits, I've got credits. So that means I can send an in-mail, write the in-mail, send it, bish, bash, bosh. But what are you doing to truly embed yourself? And then from there, it's that like the rates that people charge are mostly the same, but it's like your experience in as a hiring manager. So recruiters generally don't talk to each other. And there's a lot of beef in the recruitment industry, as I'm sure you can imagine. Low barriers to entry to start things off, small number of companies that are well regarded, a lot who are trying to make it, and respect to them. And then, you know, obviously the exec search companies who are oftentimes a solution for folks. But I mean, we could do a whole episode on exec search versus other recruitment consultancies. But I think the important thing to take a look at is there's a lot of competition. So if you're a hiring manager, how are you better than your competitors? What are you actually doing? And don't let them just show you a PowerPoint of lots of slides. Like, I want to see references, I want to see examples, and I want to see pull through in a quick period of time. And that's what's happening. We've seen a massive contraction in the number of recruitment consultancies compared to a few years ago. There are still tons of vendors, but a lot of organizations dipped their toe into pharmaceuticals recruitment because it was a hot space and have now pulled out and shut down completely and gone towards maybe what they knew before. So the ones that are left are even better. So it's just going to be more competitive. And then as well, try out different recruitment consultants because everyone's got a different style and there's not this big sausage factory where everybody's being told to read from a script. Everything is down to the personality. And yeah, different people will like different people more. So I think try different recruiters and see what fits for you.
Yeah, that's great advice.
On that note, and with a nod to Frank in France, thank you so much for coming onto the show again, Christian. It was a pleasure and I learned a lot. And let's see what happens in the next 6, 9, 12 months.
Absolutely. Thank you both.
Thank you, Christian. And we've taken notes here on some of your predictions. So we're going to have you back to see how many of them came true in the new year. We'll see how good of a prognosticator you are, but always enjoyable conversation. I think this is a topic that everybody can relate to. We all care about our careers. And if not today, we're going to have to at some point because change is ever present. So really valuable, really appreciate the insights. And I know we're all going to benefit from the discussion.
Thank you both. It's always such a pleasure.
It's always fun to have Christian on the show. He has so many insights about what's hot, what's coming, what's happening overall. And I feel like every time we talk to him, the outlook looks more and more positive. So I think that's really encouraging for many people who are out there either looking to hire or looking to find the next opportunity. And today was no exception to that.
Yeah, and Christian's our first three-peat guest, right?
That's right.
The first time we had him on was in January of this year. And I agree with you. Like he sounded, or the picture he painted, I think, of where we are today and the trends and maybe what to expect next year were really positive. I think there's a lot to be excited about. Great news for us, great news for the industry. And, you know, we keep having Christian on for I think, a good reason. People really, I think, enjoy understanding these trends, trying to get ahead of them. As I mentioned, we all care about our careers. Feedback we've gotten from our listeners has been really, really positive around this. And we want to continue to have Christian on. So we're always staying at the leading edge of the job market, for sure.
I agree with you. And I think for me personally, I just enjoy listening to him talk about areas that I'm not as familiar with. I mentioned radiopharma on the episode. And I think in general, he highlights areas that maybe are not so much on people's radar. And that's really great to know and interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, another great conversation. A lot of fun with our friend Christian. And, you know, have a great rest of the week, everybody. And thank you, Nari.
Thank you, Ian. And that's a wrap on today's episode of Real Pharma. We hope our dose of pharmaceutical discourse has left you in good spirits and has increased your titers of knowledge.
Absolutely. If you found today's pill-packed adventure as stimulating as a shot of epinephrine, we'd love for you to show us some brand loyalty.
Yes, drop us a like and leave a review. It's the best prescription for podcast success.
Think of your review as the little booster shot that keeps our show in tip-top shape.
And hey, don't just keep us as your secret remedy. Share the good vibes and let others in on our Real Pharma therapeutic sessions.
So hit that review button like it's the perfect cure for a long commute. Your feedback is the treatment that keeps us going.
Thanks for tuning in. And remember, an episode a day keeps the boredom away.
Stay curious, stay healthy, and keep this podcast prescription handy for biopharma stories and insights.
See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Please visit us at realpharma.co for more valuable resources. Real Pharma is brought to you by Black Canyon Ventures.